Telemedicine surges during the COVID-19 pandemic. Over the past few years, there's been a lot of talk about the expansion of telemedicine, encouraging doctors and other healthcare providers to conduct more visits via the web or a phone call. But telemedicine didn't really take off. A study by NYU's medical school showed that only about 8% of Americans use some form of telehealth in 2019. Boy, has that changed in the last couple months. As healthcare practices have cut down on patient visits during the COVID-19 pandemic, telemedicine appointments have skyrocketed. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the quick changes in public policy that have made more telemedicine possible. And we'll find out how it's going for providers and patients. Have you tried a virtual visit recently? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It used to be that telemedicine was mostly used for patients who lived far away from the doctor's office. Now, due to the pandemic, much of healthcare in Maine has shifted to virtual visits. Today, we'll find out how this shift has been working for both doctors, other caregivers, and patients, and whether it will change healthcare for good. Joining me, Jasmine Bishop, who is Director of Telehealth for Maine Health, and Michael Ross, a pediatrician with Northern Light Pediatric Primary Care. He is also the Regional Chief Medical Information Officer at Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you had a medical visit with your doctor by phone or by video meeting? Would you seek out telemedicine even after the coronavirus crisis recedes? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, that number, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. Jasmine, we know that the use of telemedicine in Maine has gone up exponentially since the coronavirus pandemic reached our state. Can you give us a sense of the numbers at Maine Health? I read that a hospital in New York City had 4,000 times more telehealth visits in the last couple months than it had in the months prior.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jennifer. Absolutely. It's been really a dramatic shift in our utilization. And so, you know, prior to COVID, we were seeing about 1,200 video visits per month. And just last month, we had over 10,000 video visits to give you a sense of the huge climb. And we're expecting even more this month. So people are really grasping it and as an opportunity for us to continue medical care for our patients.
Dr. Ross, I think a lot of people think of telemedicine and they think of something like a Zoom meeting or a FaceTime, but it entails more than that. Tell us all the different ways in which telemedicine is used right now.
Sure. We utilize telemedicine pretty extensively. We've had a similar leap, actually, as high as 32,000 visits over the course of the last month. We've seen it utilized across different medical specialties from everywhere, from primary care to neurology and cardiology seem to be extensively utilizing it. We've seen preoperative evaluations for it. We've seen postoperative evaluations. We've seen chronic care conditions like bariatric surgery and even psychiatric. Some considerable use of psychiatric support using telehealth.
I want to talk to both of you about the pros and cons. I'm thinking, Jasmine, that this can be great for a follow-up visit, a check-in, something that's mainly about talking, but people can't give themselves, for example, an ultrasound or a mammogram. There are limits.
Right, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because we're actually finding more ways to use video to do more of your quote-unquote physical exam. Some of our neurologists are, you know, waving their finger in front of the camera to be able to follow the eye movement of the patients. So we are finding ways to take advantage of video more than you would think outside of just the verbal communication, but there certainly are limitations to it. But we have medical peripherals that allow for more interaction with the patient. Whether it's at their home or in a clinic setting where the specialist isn't physically with them, that the clinical staff with the patient can utilize, like electronic stethoscopes that allow providers to hear patient's heart and lung sounds in real time, which are pretty cool, and some other medical peripherals that aid the telehealth visit.
So is what you're saying, Jasmine, you use the phrase the medical aid with the person. So someone may have some sort of medical assistant or another kind of aid with them, and then the two of them together talking with the physician?
Correct. So we, prior to COVID, did a lot of our telehealth in a clinic-to-clinic model. So the patient would go to your PCP's office and sit with your medical assistant there and be supported from your primary care's office and have the specialist that's at a distant location complete your specialty care visit. Now that patients are mostly doing this from home, we have not really done too much in terms of medical devices that we send the patients home with outside of our care at home team. There's a really strong home health component to telehealth that has been around for a long time. And patients actually have handheld tablets that have pulse oximetry and blood pressure capabilities so that you can get patient data and vitals in real time.
Dr. Ross, why is telemedicine taking off right now? I know that it's safer in terms of not getting COVID-19, not being exposed to the virus, but there's also been some policy changes that make it easier now than it was just a couple months ago, correct?
Absolutely. So there's been some pretty significant adjustments made associated both with some of the security posturing, some of the things that you can and can't do associated with telehealth, as well as some of the compensation models that has allowed more utilization of telehealth. It's really allowed for that connectivity that I think everyone is looking for in the midst of this pandemic. It's not always, or very little bit about medicine. It's actually about laying a stethoscope on the chest or about that exam. A lot of it is about listening and connecting and integrating, and that's where we find telehealth to excel. Really being able to connect with the patient, especially for things like anxiety or for, talking about depression or mental health checkup, that's where telehealth really can shine.
Dr. Ross, I'm wondering, though, has this meant a real culture change? Has it been difficult for many in medicine to adapt to this change and get their heads around how different this is?
It's been interesting because we've seen some folks who have really grabbed this. I would say the vast majority of providers have really grabbed this and moved forward. I think there has been some reluctance as well. We've also seen differences among different specialties, as well as among different ages of providers. So all sorts of different variables can impact how somebody does or does not jump into this proverbial pool.
I want to ask you, Jasmine, about how long this is going to last. Do you believe that after the pandemic is over, that the changes will stay for good?
I certainly hope so. It's a little bit of job security, but I think that Dr. Ross, what he was stating about the change in policy and reimbursement will have a huge factor on how much of this utilization will stay beyond the surge, inclusive of, Medicare is doing a lot more to pay for patients being seen at home in a way that they never were before. And there's certain elements of the workflow that are made easier right now, that if those were to be put back into the pre-COVID rulings, then, it would really limit our ability to keep going at least as fast as we have been.
More needs to change, though, right? I mean, I read that for a phone call, a doctor can only be reimbursed something like $12. Dr. Ross, is that true? And do you believe that that's going to change?
That's true, and actually, the vast majority of general phone calls associated with an office are not reimbursed. Most offices don't bill. I can tell you as a pediatrician, I mean, when I'm on call or when I'm in the office and need to call a patient with results, we never bill for that. What we're talking about, though, with telehealth is a scheduled or a in-depth conversation where we really discuss something that is associated with what we would do similar in the office. So it's a detailed review of a chief complaint, getting into a discussion of the history, getting what elements of analysis can be done versus, you know, lab or old radiographic studies or what have you, and then coming to a conclusion. And that's really what we're talking about when we talk about telehealth. So I think that there's a distinct difference, and I think we'll see that difference manifest itself as time continues to evolve.
But wouldn't you like to be able to be reimbursed for a phone call that, for example, let's say there's a kid who has a history of ear infections and the mom calls and describes the symptoms and you prescribe an antibiotic without seeing the child? Isn't that something that should be billable at a decent rate? Because it is telehealth, even though if you're not looking at the child.
That, I mean, there's some challenge with that particular example, but yes, I would agree that is truly a telehealth visit where someone is calling with a concern. They're presenting their concern. You're producing a medical decision and then acting upon it. I think what we want to be cautious about is we don't want to see, you know, if I'm going to call a patient, you know, with a follow up on, hey, your X-ray showed this or your EKG showed this, or if somebody calls me and says, you know, I'm concerned about, you know, this symptom, that we don't turn everything that is associated with a phone call into a telehealth visit, because that really begins to erode that important provider-patient relationship that we need to maintain.
Joining us now, Dr. Brad Rand. He's president of the Maine Dental Association. Thanks for calling in, Dr. Rand.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How much telemedicine has been utilized during the shutdown for dentists?
Well, we're in a unique situation in dentistry. The terms telehealth and telephone consultation and teledentistry have been used interchangeably. And in fact, currently, teledentistry is not defined in what we call the Maine Dental Practice Act. So teledentistry in and of itself is disallowed in Maine. Unfortunately, we had a bill that was in the legislature that was ready to be voted on that would have defined teledentistry, which then the legislature was truncated, cut short, because of a virus that we could have used teledentistry with. So it was ironic in not so great of a way. But we have been able to do what we would call the telephone consultation. And I think Dr. Roth did a great job explaining the difference between a true visit, what we would call in dentistry, for example, a limited exam. Someone has broken their tooth, and they don't know if they need to come in and have an emergency visit or not. We have been able to do that, and we've done that for years and years in dentistry in Maine, to be able to screen people and triage them and see if they need to come in or not. The other interesting part is that when you think of going to the dentist, usually you're having some sort of procedure done. You're getting your teeth cleaned. You might need to have a filling done. There are very, very few things in dentistry that we do that lend themselves to being able to perform over the phone. So it has been a challenge.
What if that bill had passed? Would that enable you to do that you're not able to do right now?
Like Dr. Ross said, I think the distinguishing factor is that I need to be able to, if I'm the dentist and I'm conducting a remote site visit, okay, I have a patient, again, let me go back to that example of the patient has broken her tooth, and I need to look and see what type of treatment needs to be performed in the future. I need to be able to collect the same amount of information or at least be able to arrive at a diagnosis. And if I'm able to do that over the phone, and perhaps that uses somebody's iPhone or phone, they're able to use some sort of video chat with me so that I can see. I don't recommend putting your phone in your mouth. That's another radio show for another day. But you're able to see, and I can see and diagnose what needs to be done. That could, in effect, turn into a billable visit that would have been very similar than if you had come in and sat in my chair in my office.
Well, Dr. Rand, thanks so much for calling in. That's Dr. Brad Rand, who is president of the Maine Dental Association. Now joining us is Mary Pribilo with St. Joseph's Healthcare. Hi, Mary. Thanks so much for calling in.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Mary is president of St. Joseph's Healthcare at St. Joseph's Hospital. Tell us about your hospital and the changes you've seen since the start of the COVID-19 crisis. Have there been fewer patients coming in the door?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, partly we put that in place as protection for our patients and also to preserve our PPE. So, you know, back in March when we canceled all of our elective procedures and surgeries and that sort, so definitely a decrease. But overall, even in our emergency department, and in fact, we're encouraging people now to make sure they do come to the emergency room if they have problems, because we've been concerned about that. Our ambulatory practices really flipped almost completely to telemedicine, though we do have kind of a clinic open for people who may need to be seen directly, particularly if it's a COVID-related issue.
What role does telemedicine play among your patient population?
Oh, it's been huge. I mean, I think we were using it to a small extent in the past. You know, the St. Joe's in Bangor, we serve certainly the city of Bangor, but also other rural areas. So one, I think it's easier for patients to access their providers and be more comfortable. The feedback that we're getting from people is that they feel more at home talking with their provider in their own comfortable space. They don't have to travel. There isn't as many missed appointments. So it has allowed us to stay connected to our patients, and particularly some of our high-risk patients or people who have some chronic illnesses.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. That's Mary Pribolo. She's president of St. Joseph Hospital. I appreciate it. I'm going to go before the break to a call from Sharon on Islesboro. Hi, Sharon. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. So I'm a nurse that works for the Maine Seacoast Mission. I've been doing telemedicine from the Sunbeam to the islands for the last 18 years, which I feel has really been great for the islands and has been able to improve people's health. And I'm really excited about some of the changes that I see, the increased use of telemedicine, because I've seen it work very well.
Sharon, what lessons have you learned over those last 18 years that you think sort of the rest of the medical world can learn from Islesboro?
Well, I actually don't do telemedicine on Islesboro. I do it on a lot of the other islands, like Matinicus. But what I've learned is it's that personal connection that everybody's been talking about. So the providers that I work with know the patients that they're seeing. So there's a relationship there, and I'm also there and know the people, and that really, just that continuity of care and the follow-up that happens when you are able to offer a telemedicine appointment instead of somebody flying off of Matinicus and losing 2 or 3 days worth of work and paying a couple of $100 for the flight. They're much more likely to do a telemedicine visit if it's made easy for them. And so I think that's something that really improves people's health.
So that's one of the silver linings, that people are more likely to do a follow-up visit,
right,
if it's less burdensome.
Right. So for something like if somebody gets put on a new blood pressure medication and if they're feeling fine, they're really reluctant to go off if it's going to be expensive and time-consuming. But if it's made easy for them and they can have their blood pressure checked and sit and talk with the doctor, and that's really important, they're much more likely to do that.
Sharon, thanks so much for calling in and joining, adding your voice to this conversation about telemedicine. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Ocean View at Falmouth, committed to the health and well-being of its residents and the greater community. And St. Mary's Health System Orthopedics, helping patients live their best lives in motion. Online at findabonedoctorme.org. Trusted news, quality entertainment, and lifelong learning is what Maine Public Television is all about. 4 channels strong. And a reminder about the new daytime educational fair, from science to nature to history programming for the older kids at home. We have the PBS Kids channel for preschool kids, but our main channel has more afternoon programming for older learners, starting at 1 each afternoon. And the Maine Public World Channel is offering the same each weekday afternoon from 12 to 5. Television programming that is worthwhile and educational to watch. See the schedule for our Maine HD and World channels at mainepublic.org. Click on the television drop-down. Giving Tuesday Now is happening this coming Tuesday, tomorrow, May 5th. This global day of giving aims to support nonprofits during the COVID-19 pandemic. We hope you will count Maine Public among the organizations you support. During these challenging times, public radio is more important than ever, and it's critical that Maine Public remain adequately funded so we can continue to keep you and your neighbors informed. All donations made to Maine Public today will be matched. You can make a donation anytime at mainepublic.org, and thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, how has the shift to more telemedicine been working out? Our guests are Dr. Michael Ross, who's a pediatrician and chief medical information officer with Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center, and Jasmine Bishop, director of telehealth with Maine Health. We invite you to be part of the conversation. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us right now, Lisa Letourneau, who is Senior Advisor, Delivery System Change for the Maine Department of Health and Human Services. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks so much, Jennifer.
Lisa, how has federal and state funding supported more use of telemedicine, and what are the funds going toward?
Well, I'm pleased to say that on the state side, the Maine Medicaid program, or MaineCare, really has been, I think, recognized as a national leader in supporting payment for telehealth, and for several years now has covered telehealth services really at the same rate that they would be delivered in person. And through this epidemic, we've really kicked up additional supports by covering more types of providers and more types of services under the telehealth delivery through telehealth. CMS or Medicare has been a little bit slower on that side, but also through this pandemic has really stepped up very quickly to allow payment for more codes and more provider types as well. Additionally, the state through executive action at the beginning of the pandemic also required that commercial payers pay for additional services and again pay for telehealth services at the same rate that they would for an in-person visit. So those have all been, I think, hugely needed and welcomed changes that are helping the provider community deliver those services.
Lisa, do you think that these changes are here to stay, that at 2, 3, 4 years from now, we're still going to be using telehealth at the same rate or even greater rates?
Well, I think they're definitely here to stay in many ways. That said, you know, there's a lot of detail, and I'm sure your guests know that, the devil's in the details. And some of the changes that were passed by Medicare, for example, were for specifically the emergency period. That said, I think the most frequent icon you see around this is the genie, you know, can't get the genie back in the bottle. And I think that patients and providers are really going to, you know, welcome the changes that are made. And I think many of us will be doing all we can to continue to encourage delivery of services through telehealth whenever and wherever that's appropriate.
Lisa, thanks so much for calling in. That's Lisa Letourneau with the Maine Department of Health and Human Services. I'm going to go to Frank, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Frank. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, my name is Frank Heller, and I had a small business back in the 80s and 90s called Papa Data. I specialized in the automation of doctor's offices. And most of the doctors that I worked with were advanced technologically. Their offices reflected it. And what we evolved from was basically the automation of the billing records through insurance companies. And then that evolved into databases for patients. And that databases could be shared with other physicians. In fact, there were some physicians in Blue Hill who were actually using satellites to communicate with clients in Saudi Arabia. So this is something that's gone on very quietly, and the people who are involved in it are physicians who are really in the advance of their fields and their professions. So this has evolved to the point of where we can transfer both. We can basically have a physical not a physical interface, but we can basically have a look at the patient. We can also have a collaboration with another physician, and we can do it all over a piece of software. At 3:30 this afternoon, I'll be collaborating with a physician. I don't know. We may have a third party involved in it, but we're using Zoom software to do that with. You can also begin to transfer if it's an emergency. I've got a calf injury now, and that the state of that calf injury was such that I couldn't walk anywhere, let alone go to the hospital. So that photo was taken and transferred to one of my physicians, and that physician looked at it, and then they recommended going to the ER and having certain things done, and they phoned in the request for the lab work. So as you can see, this is, gets to be pretty interesting when you've got the individual patient being able to interact using the internet now and having everything that includes scans and also direct photographs sent in. To make it even more interesting, it's evolved to the point where you can take information and you can actually monitor vital signs. I have a pacemaker, and they were talking about replacing it. And I said, well, yeah, but, you know, I keep going in for these pacemaker checks. And I said, you won't have to do that with the new pacemakers because we have a way of being able to, you know, being able to monitor it at home. And they have a little device, and it goes on your phone. And they can not only change it, they can monitor how well it's functioning, how the batteries are doing, but they can either reprogram it that way as well. So you've got this kind of direct electronic interface, mostly made possible through the use of the internet, but it's also pretty sophisticated business.
Frank, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for calling and sharing and working on this since the 80s. Jasmine, any thoughts about Frank's story?
I think Frank's story is great because it highlights the fact that there's more to telehealth than just video visits. Some of the tools that he's talking about, we call like internet consultations or e-consults, where you can share some data, you know, asynchronously or not at the same time. The provider's looking at that data maybe a few hours or a few days later and sending back their medical recommendation. And that's really helpful for making sure that before you actually have to travel to your specialist office, maybe it's a few hours, maybe it's 6 hours, that you really did need that referral in the first place. And it allows our primary care community to take care of more of their patients on their own. And he also brought up the point of remote patient monitoring, the idea that you can have a blood pressure cuff or any other kind of vitals that are available for nurse triage teams to monitor and understand whether or not you are having a adverse event. The last thing that I noted that he brought up, and we've mainly been focusing this hour on our outpatient or ambulatory telehealth, but there's a lot that we did during COVID to address inpatient or in the hospital. So as we heard several of the guests talk about, we've had to reduce the visitors that are available to see their loved ones in the hospital, and that's been very tough. So another version of telehealth is to video enable our isolation rooms in the hospitals to make sure that the patients can connect with their loved ones, and the providers can also connect with that patient without coming in and out of that room, so you can reduce that burn of PPE that another guest mentioned earlier in the hour.
Yeah, Dr. Ross, any follow-up?
Yeah, I would say that Frank is an innovator. Frank is ahead of the curve and speaking towards many of the elements that we are excited to bring to mainstream now that we are moving in this direction with some lightening of some of the barriers that have been present beforehand. The focus on whether it be direct patient connection, telemonitoring, or as was mentioned, asynchronous communication where you would send a picture or send a message, is all things that are exciting and are going to be coming to the forefront.
Frank, thanks so much for your call. We're going to go now to Dr. Gregory Ady. He's a urologist with Four River Urology in South Portland. Dr. Ady, thanks for calling in.
Jennifer, thanks for including me today. I really appreciate it.
So you're a specialist. You're not doing things like physicals and basic checkups. So how has telemedicine been working for you? And in your view, what are the pros and cons?
Sure. It's been incredibly helpful to us. And, you know, once we went into the stay-at-home mandate and we sort of shut things down in the office very quickly because we have a combination of things that we see that are chronic illnesses that are really not urgent. And so in that patient population who is also at risk for significant medical problems if they were to contract coronavirus, it was easy for us to decide who had to be seen and who didn't need to be seen. And the didn't need to be seen was a large group. And so we were able to pivot very quickly, and we started adopting telemedicine, the platform that we used. We identified within 24 hours and started using it the next day. And it's been incredibly helpful. I think it allows us to maintain that face-to-face connection as opposed to a telephonic encounter, which you are still connecting the patient and saving them the potential risk of a face-to-face encounter. But there is something more to seeing the patient as well as hearing them. And I think vice versa. I think it works both ways. And I think patients have really engaged with being able to see their provider at the same time. It's the reason why we all love to FaceTime with our parents or our grandparents or their grandparents with their grandchildren. Telephone calls worked great for many, many years, but I think they would all say that they're adopting audiovisual platforms. And that the fact that they've all FaceTimed with their grandchildren or with their own children has helped us in terms of the adoption. It's certainly not been perfect and super smooth, and there are things that we've learned in the last 8 weeks, but it's been incredibly valuable to us as a small business, but also as a healthcare business.
It's interesting. As you were speaking, an email came in from Peter. He says, I see patients for cardiology in follow-up with telehealth. It's been a huge plus for our practice and our patients. What surprises me is the number of Mainers who either do not have the capability for video appointments or do not have internet. Over 50% of my patient visits are by telephone. I prefer video over telephone, but telephone is better than nothing. So another specialist there. Dr. Ady, before I let you go, I want to ask you if you see this being a big part of your practice after the pandemic recedes.
I absolutely do. And we're bolstered by the fact that, you know, well before the pandemic, Governor Mills signed into law a telehealth law, which I think we're one of under 10 states that had a law like that in place. And so it made it very easy for us to adopt it quickly without any concerns about the legal aspects. We adopted a HIPAA-compliant platform from day one. And so I think here in Maine, it is going to be a perfect adjunct to our practice. I think there are clear things that there are clear advantages to seeing a patient face-to-face. And if there weren't, we would have bots doing our jobs. And that's not coming anytime soon. So, but there are clear advantages to not having a patient take a half day off of work or a full day off of work to come sit in a crowded waiting room to get results that could easily be discussed telephonically or audiovisually.
Dr. Ady, thanks so much for calling in. That's Dr. Greg Ady with Four River Urology. Dr. Ross, we've been talking a lot about pros and cons, but there are also some hidden benefits, not as obvious, that you've found. Tell me about those.
Absolutely. I think that clients and visits and time to visits and waiting time have all been decreased. Folks are not, you know, at the mercy of a provider schedule and waiting in a waiting room. We've talked about the obvious, the reduction in PPE and the reduction in COVID exposure. But one of the things that's so exciting and so intimate about telehealth is being able to take a look inside the patient's home. You know, I've both as a CMIO as well as a practicing doc who does telehealth, I've had experiences while seeing a patient where I'm looking into their house and I'm understanding a little better about some of the issues that are leading to some of the challenges. So whether that is associated with their physical setup, you know, the amount of light they're getting, the amount of exercise they're getting, whether that is associated with some behavioral challenges, whether that is associated with their ability to do things like take a medicine regularly or have prompts to seek care. All those things are suddenly kind of brought into focus. I think most of us, when we go see the doctor, we're kind of on our best behavior a little bit. I know certainly as a patient, I am to some degree. And this kind of puts people, it reduces some of the what we call that white coat syndrome, that idea of, you know, I've kind of got to be, act like I can't really be me. And so it relaxes some of those tensions that are present sometimes in the exam room. And then finally, you know, especially for some of the adult patients, you're not sitting there in a gown, you know, half undressed, which is very difficult to kind of talk about how you're feeling when you're that vulnerable. So all these factors have led, I think, to more of a intimate discussion and more of an open discussion.
Oh, interesting. And almost in a way, bringing back the house visit.
Yes, exactly.
We'll go to Mabel, who's calling from Ocean View in Falmouth. Hi, Mabel. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. This is fascinating because I was just talking to a friend walking distantly here the other day about this type of thing, that I felt very strongly this is going to change a lot of what's going on in the medical world about seeing patients at any rate. And I think it will. And it's, all these professionals you've just had on are definitely talking that way, and they seem to like the whole idea. I just had my first telehealth, I guess you call it, a couple of weeks ago with my primary care in at Intermed. And I only saw her once before when she came taking my past doctor's place about a year ago for a yearly wellness checkup, because I'm 88. And all of a sudden, I got a call from the nurse to set this up. And I said, wonderful, great, perfect. And it did work very well. And in fact, it was very relaxed, I think, for both of us. And I liked her, not remembering her so well as her new patient of a year, but only seen her once. I felt much more strongly of how we connected and how much I liked her and felt confident. And so fortunately, I don't have to take anything. But this time I just made up she was laughing. She said, you only take a multivitamin a day. And I said, yes, fortunately, fingers crossed. And but I thought, well, there was something about my throat or speaking that I wanted to talk about, an age thing, I guess. So we did talk about it, and she prescribed something. She felt like she knew exactly what it was over this phone call and or telecall. And we're trying it for months, and then I'll have another. I already have a date for the next one.
And, Mabel, that's it sounds like it's exactly what Dr. Ross was just talking about, that you were able to feel relaxed. Mm-hmm. Maybe not sitting in a Johnny and on a cult. Right.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your experience. We are going to take another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We're talking about telemedicine, and we'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice, providing compassionate home health, hospice, and care management. For health, for life. androscoggin.org. And Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine, inspiring students to confront prejudice and discrimination through educational programs at the Michael Klar Center.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
Sportscaster and TV personality Aaron Andrews was born in Lewiston on May 4, 1978. Andrews is known for her work at ESPN, Fox Sports, and ABC's Good Morning America. With Fox Sports, Andrews has covered the network's biggest events, including Super Bowl 48, Super Bowl 51, the NFC Championship and Divisional Round Games, Major League Baseball's All-Star Game and World Series, and more. Andrews bridges sports and entertainment and co-hosts ABC's Dancing with the Stars.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries and Maine Maritime Museum. Happy birthday, Maine!
The Daily Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus is scheduled to take place in just a few minutes, about 2 this afternoon. Governor Mills is expected to join Dr. Shaw at today's briefing. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, each day's address is archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and Governor Mills at 2 this afternoon and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking today about the use of telemedicine to deliver health care. what's working and what's not. My guests are Jasmine Bishop with Maine Health and Dr. Michael Ross with Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. If you're fast, you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Calling in now, Poppy Arford. She is from Brunswick and had a recent telehealth visit with her physician. Poppy, thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much for offering this service to people to learn about this.
Tell us about your experience with telehealth.
Well, I had a very positive experience, and my very first experience with this as well. And my situation, I know that I need to say this relatively quickly, so if I'm talking too fast, please interrupt me. But
you're doing great.
I had a tick bite. My husband found a tick on the backside of my body, and it was a deer tick, and it was red and swollen, and it hurt. And I knew I needed immediate attention. This was on actually the 22nd of April, so it was very recent that this happened. And I had had Lyme disease in the way past, and I was terrified of getting sick again, especially with everything that's happening now with COVID. So I attempted to get through to my primary care doctor, which are on very limited hours, and they were not able, because they're so busy dealing with COVID, to call me back within that day. And so I knew of this other doctor who had treated me years past for Lyme and also was currently treating me for other things. And I knew his office was shut down, but I thought, what the heck, I'll try calling anyhow. And I did, and I found out that, in fact, they were offering telehealth services. And so I was able to schedule an appointment. It was they called me back. They explained exactly how to do it. It was all done through email initially, the scheduling of the appointment. And then we scheduled a time, and they sent me the link and everything I needed to know to join, virtually. It was a video conferencing. And at the appointed time, I clicked in, and there was my doctor. It was wonderful, actually.
Oh, and, well, that's, it's great. And how are you doing, Maura? Are you, Poppy.
The good news is that in less than 48 hours, I was able to start antibiotics. And the other good news is, I don't know how many people with us today have experienced telemedicine, video conferencing, but it was so focused, it was extremely helpful, and he could even share, he ended up writing out a prescription for me, and we were concerned that it was a little bit complicated, that things would get lost in the translation between him and the pharmacist. So he was actually able to print out and sign the prescription and email it to me through the link that we had. So I could print it out immediately myself in my own home and take it down to my pharmacist myself.
Wow.
It was like amazing. It just worked so well.
Well, Poppy, I appreciate you calling. Stay on the line. Dr. Ross, we heard from Mabel before the break, and now Poppy, do you have thoughts about both of those calls?
Yeah, I think that they demonstrate the power of telehealth and that connectivity of telehealth. The other thing I think that we want to be very cautious about is the risk of telehealth of having all the information before prescribing treatment. And, with tick bite prophylaxis, that is a great situation where we have a known exposure, we have a known treatment, we're going to treat with doxycycline and kind of take that next step. In other situations, there are times where we want to be more cautious and not utilize telehealth. So I think example earlier we talked about, for an ear infection, we probably wouldn't treat an ear infection over the phone and telehealth, because in that situation, we need a direct exam, and we do want to make sure there isn't a chronic issue of recurrent ear infections that might need a different type of management. So antibiotics are a carefully considered tool for telehealth, one where we want to be very cautious about their use.
All right.
Jennifer, could I just say
one more
thing?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So the other thing that was, again, this wasn't over the phone. This was video conferencing. And so he did not do a physical exam, but I was able to share a photo of the tick bite so he could see it. And he had me send my tick into a lab. And within 3 days, we had the results that the tick was, in fact, a carrier of Lyme disease. So he was able to confirm everything. And it was, and I understand the concern. We do not want to overprescribe antibiotics. I totally understand that. But in this case, this prevented me from getting really ill. I am fully convinced of that.
Well, Poppy, thank you so much for calling in.
That's exactly the kind of situation where we have that information together, and that is perfect.
Great. Sharing your story, Poppy and Mabel's stories. We're going to go to Maura, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Maura. Go ahead. Maura, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling. Darn. Okay, I guess we've lost Maura. I want to ask each of you, though, Jasmine and Dr. Ross, about security. I understand that the rules have been changed so that some consumer platforms can be now used for telemedicine. Jasmine, how can patients be certain that their information is not being hacked?
That's a great question. I would tell patients to talk to their providers, organizations, because we have put in specific workflow elements to make sure that it's secure. Certain places are using passwords before you can join a video visit. We have an ability so that the video room basically changes every time, so you could never use that same link again that some of your callers had mentioned. We, as an organization, have decided to keep using HIPAA compliant platforms like the urologist mentioned earlier, because we aren't sure when the HIPAA compliant requirements will come back. And that's the privacy requirements that were one of the policies that made it easier to access telehealth. And I think that patients in general, just speaking back to Mabel and some of the other callers' points, our patient feedback is showing the same thing that they're saying. Patients are a little apprehensive at first, but then pleasantly surprised and are having the same experience where, you know, certainly can't do everything over telehealth and are missing the ability to maybe get their lab, but are surprised at how much you can still get out of the interaction. So I think for that reason, more and more, especially if you talk to your provider, people are willing to, you know, take that leap of faith and understanding that there are security elements in place. There's things called encryption and workflow elements, like I mentioned, and there's different types of licenses. So lots of us are Zooming with our families on Friday nights, maybe, and doing happy hours, or I've seen baby showers and weddings and things happening over Zoom. And I think it's really important to understand, even though we're all saying the word Zoom, it's not the same as maybe some of the healthcare level Zoom licenses, as an example, that our organization uses. So again, I would just say, talk to your organization, fully understand the platform that they're using, and that'll be the best way to make sure that your information stays secure.
Dr. Ross, thoughts about that?
I think she said it brilliantly. I would concur. We're also utilizing Zoom, and it's not the same Zoom that you may have heard about with Zoom bombing and folks, you know, jumping in, but one that has a virtual waiting room and has an isolation associated with encrypted security. The lightening of the load has really spoken to allowing things, even like FaceTime. Our organization made a decision not to go down that path out of concern. So while the loosening of security has allowed to move things forward, not taking that degree of levity, I think, is very important.
An email from Amy from Spurwink. In addition to physical health services, behavioral health services like outpatient therapy, medication management, substance use treatment, and case management are also being largely delivered by telehealth by behavioral health organizations across Maine and the country. At a time when stress and anxiety are high due to the pandemic, access to mental health supports is vitally important. Due to the pandemic, insurance companies have expanded coverage of telehealth offered and even loosened some of the restrictions, making it easier for individuals to get the support they need either by video platform or simply over the phone. Most organizations have central intake centers that can take referrals. Information also available on 211. Spurwink Central Intake is available at 871 1200, 871-1200. I know, Dr. Ross, you mentioned this at the beginning of the program, but worth a repeat. Also, Robin on Facebook says, since we cannot let owners into our veterinary center due to new COVID-19 protocols, we have been doing telehealth appointments for some of our more complex cases so owners can have FaceTime with a veterinarian, then bring the pet in for the physical part of the appointment. It works out so much better than just trying to go back and forth over the phone. But we are finding some people are resistant to the idea. Are they running into this issue with human practices? Any tips from the human field to help them feel more comfortable with the whole concept? So, Dr. Ross, any tips for veterinarians?
Sure. It'd be difficult to scale, both in terms of size as well as terms of one of the things that we've done is a patient-facing help desk, which has been very helpful. And that calls 3 to 4 days before the visit and helps to set folks up on Zoom or on our platform. And that has worked out really well. We've also enlisted some other technical ways of increasing awareness out there. One of the issues we really struggled with in the beginning was suddenly we took offices that, you know, with medical assistant staff and clerical staff, and suddenly they had to do tech support. And that's quite a lot to grasp in the setting of a rapid launch. So this help desk has been really helpful.
We're going to try to go back to more and more. We're almost out of time, so if you can be quick, that'd be great.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out it's helpful for people to write out questions ahead, their symptoms and their meds, and if they have a personal support specialist to help them with it. And also, this is important because Maine electronic records do not sync. So different healthcare systems may not have someone's records. Finally, there's something called the GrandPad available through Consumer Cellular that has, it's like an easy to use, it has its own Wi-Fi. It's about $40 a month. And it's a great instrument for people who aren't tech savvy. Thank you.
Thanks, Maura. Jasmine, about 30 seconds. Thoughts about Maura's call?
Yeah, I think that's a great point to bring up. I mean, we have had patients. One of the things that I would fear with telehealth is that it'll be the thing that increases the gap to care for our different populations. So I think that anytime we can call out devices that are more affordable so that patients can access telehealth so that this isn't a thing that prevents certain populations from getting care is always great. And then I know you've had Angus King on the main calling previously talking about the broadband. We didn't get into that too much today, but I think that, you know, continuing to push forward any efforts to expand broadband across our state is really going to be crucial to seeing telehealth continue to be used on a wide scale.
Thank you, Maura, for your call. And thank you so much to our guests, the voice you just heard, Jasmine Bishop, Director of Telehealth at Maine Health, and Dr. Michael Ross, pediatrician and regional chief medical information officer with Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay tuned for the latest update from CDC Director Nirav Shah. That's coming up in a few minutes on television, radio, and the website. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.